Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Her Journey Told podcast. On this show, we will focus on strengthening women's mental fitness through sharing the joy, struggle, and wisdom of each woman's journey. Our show is powered by Pivotal Moments. Go to pivotalmoments.org to learn more. Hello, and welcome to the Her Journey Told podcast. I'm your host, Sandy Lutton, and I'm so excited to have Beth Shahey back in the house again. And
Woo-hoo! We have
continued our discussion around Brené Brown's book, Atlas of the Heart. And for those of you who don't know Beth, and you should by now if you've been tuning in, she is a master certified life coach and founder of The Grounded Canary. Welcome, Beth.
Thanks. Love always our time together. So
yes, this has been so much fun for me. I've really enjoyed going through this book and having this discussion because it helps me to even understand it to a deeper level, but it also has really fueled my own self-development and the work that I've been trying to do on myself. So it's so good. And I love sharing this with people and actually talking about it, which is a hard thing for me sometimes when it comes to talking about feelings, but I have to admit this has really helped me. So I'm enjoying today's discussion. We're going to continue down the path of Brené's book. And for those of you who don't know Brené Brown, she is a research professor who has really taught us that you can find strength in vulnerability. And that is something she has studied. And if you haven't heard, she's got an incredible Netflix episode out there. She's got one of the, if not the most listened to TED Talk at this point. She's a 5-time number one New York Times bestseller. So she knows what she's talking about.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you mentioned that TED Talk. I just watched it a couple nights ago. Mm-hmm. And my daughter said, "Mom, what are you watching?" She could just hear it in the background. And I said, "You know what? I'm watching something for the first time that I'm really interested in." And she said, "No, I think I've heard you watch that before." And I said, "Oh no, it's amazing how each time I watch it, I feel like I'm watching it for the first time because I hear it differently. I digest it differently. And now because I've been so immersed in this book right now, I'm seeing her differently. I was like, oh, there she is live and in person." Yeah. So I love that TED Talk. And you know, I would even say this book has been truly amazing when I look at the cover of it. You know, there's a picture of a heart and it's actually a really beautiful picture of it. And I think this is the first time I might've actually digested what it says on there. We are the map makers and the travelers. And I thought that was interesting, Sandy, because it kind of pretty much says that, you know, we are creating our own path, but we're also traveling along the way. So just like you talked about the work that you're doing and the work that I'm doing along the way as we're developing our own selves, you know, we're traveling through. And we have options to, you know, for how this map looks and how we create it. And I thought that was kind of a neat thing I hadn't even spotted before on the front of her book.
That's one of the things that I've enjoyed about this book so much is how it is written and the approach that they took. I mean, the idea here is that we are learning how to put language to our feelings and really understand our own feelings and emotions better so that we can better connect and understand with others, right? Yes, and absolutely. The idea behind the map is that, like you said, it's a journey and it's identifying where we are, where we're going, the work we need to do, the work we want to go. And it's a map to kind of show you how to do that. And I think that, wow, what an interesting way to write a book about feelings and emotions.
Yeah. We can all kind of relate to a map, you know, picture it when you unfold it and, you know, you pull it all a big giant map and you pull it out and you can measure certain things and you see where you are and it gives perspective. It's kind of that you are here now moment.
Yes.
And so what does that look like? Where are you right now? And when we dial in on that, in when it comes to our emotions, our thoughts, our feelings, and we're vulnerable with ourselves, we're able to connect in a way that that really allows us to know where we're going or where we want to go and create it.
So. Absolutely. And it's such an evolution. It's something I think that it's the type of work we will always do in our lives, right? If we're really trying to connect and understand ourselves better and others, it's something that you just have to continue to work at. So what a great tool. And I think you had mentioned in a previous podcast that Glennon Doyle mentioned that this should be the family Bible, if you will, like it really helps guide to guide those discussions and help you understand each other better. And let's be honest, like, it's the family dynamic where we need that the most. That's where we spend the most time, is with our family and growing up. And we are a product of our environment. So what a great tool that is for people that are out there who are like trying to figure out how to connect better with, I know me personally, how do I connect better with my children in this digital world where their faces are always in screens? And how do I talk to them about certain things? How do I teach them how to share their emotions and what they're going through? And, you know, it's funny because we all have, every single day in our lives, there's something that you have to do or an event, and you might feel one way or the other about it, but really being able to dig in and understand, you know, it's what's creating anxiety? What are you excited about? What's good anxiety versus bad anxiety, that kind of thing. And I know that as we've gone through this book, it's really resonated with me, a lot of different examples of just trying to have discussions with just even my kids, much less everyone else in the workplace as well. So it's definitely relative wherever you look.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
So we've covered a lot of territory in this book so far, and there's so much here. And I think we're at a place now where we're digging into the area where she talks about when things aren't what they seem, the places that we go. I think that's chapter 5, when things aren't what they seem. And that was a real interesting one to me, because some of the words and emotions that she used in that were amusement, bittersweet, nostalgia, which that one kind of shocked me a little bit. I had to dig into that. Cognitive dissonance, paradox, irony, and sarcasm. There's a lot there. But was there anyone in particular that stood out to you?
You know, I mean, they're also interesting. And, you know, when you name them off, you know, we can all kind of have a quick definition of some of those. But for me to really read about them and dig in and see some of her examples, that was really helpful for me to understand it. I actually went to a musical on campus at a local university that I'm at, and it was called Nostalgia Night. And so all of a sudden I was thinking, right, nostalgia. It's like, it gives you this perspective when you really understand the definition. But as I'm looking over these, I think it's fascinating how many times these come up on a daily basis. And I think bittersweet, for instance, this mixture of feeling happiness and sadness. There was a list in the book that she talked about several of the things that people experience when they feel this bittersweetness. And I see that a lot with clients where, you know, they're really excited about their children growing up, but they also are having a rough time knowing that they're going to be gone from their house and the family dynamics are going to be different. I'm experiencing that now. But when you go down that list, leaving a job, divorce or ending a relationship, graduation, letting go of friendships that aren't working, moving, death of a loved one, teachers, you know, watching students graduate, retiring, coming home from vacation, something as simple as coming home from vacation, it's bittersweet.
Yeah.
You know, there's some familiarity of this, of structure and the system of being back in your place. Ah, okay, we're home, you know.
Right.
But how often do we still long for where we were, sitting, you know, on a beach chair somewhere in Hawaii, or watching, you know, the river go in the mountains after a hike, right?
Right.
So we have these where it's holding two things at the same time. And often they're very conflictual, and knowing that and being able to give language to the fact that, yes, I have a part of me that feels this way, and I have a part of me that feels this way, it helps you to start to understand why that might feel that way. So I thought that one was kind of a fun one to explore. How about you? Have you experienced any of those bittersweet moments?
Oh, definitely. I mean, yeah, every time I go on vacation, I definitely feel that. So for sure, for certain, I mean, even just this week, my son, Luke, who's in the Cub Scouts, just, you know, went through his Arrow of Light ritual last night.
Sounds bittersweet.
where they walk across a bridge. And this ritual is so cool, because what happens is you get the Cub Scouts, like his troop is on one side, and they, each one, as they graduate, walk across the bridge and they take off their scarf and hand it to their leader. They walk across the bridge, and on the other side of the bridge is their Boy Scout troop. So now they're graduating to this, you know, the more mature group. Right. And they're waiting on the new troop is waiting on the other side, and they hand them their new scarf and they shake all their hands. And, And so Luke being my baby, right? He's crossing the bridge and my son Jack is on the other side waiting for him because he's going to be joining his Boy Scout troop and Jack is older. So Jack's shaking his hand. And I remember 3 years ago when Jack went across and I was like all emotional, and, you know, because I was like, he's growing up. But with Luke this time, I could see the excitement on his face and how, and part of me was like super happy and proud. It was that proud moment, right? That he'd put in the work. He had done a great job. He was excited. But at the same time, he's kind of saying goodbye to this more youthful side of him. And I'm like, you know, that maturity in your children. And you kind of mentioned that, right? When they are leaving, like that for me, still bittersweet because I enjoy that usefulness and the immaturity. And I also enjoy the maturity. So it's tough thinking that, wow, they're getting older and I don't have any more children who will do that, go through that ritual. Right. But it was at the same time, it's like, but how cool is it that Jack and Luke are back together now, you know, going through these activities together and sharing that and those experiences with one another. So yeah, I mean, every day, right? You experience something very similar to that.
Yeah. And it reminds me of what Brené talks about early on in the book about how we all tend to see things in big buckets. You know, I'm feeling sad, I'm feeling frustrated, I'm feeling angry. But when we get down to some of the nuances of what we're feeling, we're able to better understand it. So literally we're having this, rather than just this tension feeling or this frustration or this sadness, we're able to say, no, this is more. And oh, this is happening and this is happening.
Right.
So it's important though. It's important to hold the part of you in that situation where you're feeling a loss and you're feeling like, you know, this is a moment in time that I'm not going to have back. And they're transitioning into a different space and time. They're growing up. And that feels like this. That feels, you know, that is an experience I want to sink into, feel, and transfer, you know, in. But then there's also this excitement when we blur it together, we don't allow ourselves to feel both, grow from both, and acknowledge them both.
Right.
So when we look at them separately, we can use the excitement of what's to come for them to soothe us in our sadness, but without recognizing both at the same time, we're just kind of this stalemate, if you
yes.
will. Yeah. So I think that this is an example of what Brené is really hoping that people can start to pull back and really look at those layers and understand it better.
Right. Right. No, it's true. I think even for Luke, he felt a little sense of that because what happens is his troop that he's leaving, they tend to go different directions. They don't all go to the same next troop, right? So he's going to a troop that not all of his buddies are going with. So it was, I think, a little bit of a bittersweet for him too. And they did this, you know, this slideshow with the, you know, all the years these kids had been together, all the camping events and all the fun, you know, experiences that they had. It was so sweet seeing them, you know, grow over the years. And then now they're kind of going separate ways. So it'll be interesting for them to see how they continue their own relationships because they're not going to be necessarily having these same experiences together anymore. They're going to be doing it separately in some cases. So to me, I thought that was really interesting. I think it was a bit of he also experienced that bittersweet a little bit.
Yeah, very interesting. You know, in the beginning of this chapter, she talks a little bit about not only the concept of being able to hold that at the same time, whether it's with Luke or you as his mom, but also this feeling about sometimes we're just uncertain. So I made it sound like it's very clear when it's bitter, it's sweet. We know
right,
what's bitter,
right,
we know
right.
what's sweet. Sometimes we just don't know. And sometimes, you know, it just takes the vulnerability that Brené talks about, the courage, the humility to say, I just don't even know. And so oftentimes when we're dealing with our kids, they might not understand and be able to easily identify two things that are happening at the same time. But us showing our uncertainty in those moments can be a gift to other people.
Right.
I don't know what's going on. I know I'm feeling both of these things, but I haven't yet been able to figure it out. Then we move into things where we use the glossary of terms like bittersweet or nostalgia. And we say, this is what's going on. But I kind of wanted to back us up just for a minute.
Yeah.
To bring light to that, what that humility and vulnerability can look like and how it can actually be a gift to not know and have that uncertainty.
Right.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it really is. This also made me think about a situation where my son and a friend of his, it was a group of boys that were all good friends. And then one of them moved away and they were all really sad. Like they had become really tight and the family moved out of the area. And then, you know, fast forward a few years, this gentleman is moving back into town with his family. And my son was super excited. And his buddy was like, yeah, I'm happy, but he was a little bit conflicted. And as we started to talk to him and his mom shared some of this with me that, you know, really what he was experiencing was we had such a great relationship before. What if it's not the same, right? That it's like you said, that uncertainty, he wasn't sure. He's like, what if it's not the same? What if it's not as good as it was? And I remember, you know, and then I have different memories of it. And, you know, I thought I would have never thought that, but what a, you know, just profound statement for a child to be able to make and say, oh, but what if it's, you know, like it hadn't registered to me that they might feel that way, but digging in and having that conversation, which kudos to that mom who did that, you know, she started to ask the questions to better understand, like, what do you mean? Why, you know, and it wasn't that he wasn't happy, absolutely happy. But at the same time, he did have concerns and there was some uncertainty and, you know, and I thought, oh, wow, how insightful. But now we all know as the parents, right, kind of how to help navigate that, right? As they, their lives start to intersect with each other again, right? So it's really interesting, but it was good to see. And I feel like children do this way better than we as adults, but they can be so much more vulnerable and just out there with their feelings than we are. And so for me, that was a little bit of a lesson, right? It was, oh, I could be more like that. I can learn from this child and I can be a lot more like that and kind of sharing how I really feel, right?
Yeah, so absolutely.
I thought that was really interesting.
And it's such a great thing to model for our kids when we don't know things, just to simply say, I'm not quite sure. I'm exploring it a little. I'm trying to understand it. And, you know, it might take a little while, but once we figure it out, then we're able to use that as knowledge to go forward. So,
yeah, it's funny. I was watching a speech this week. I was out of town for traveling for work. And this gentleman gave a speech, very heart-wrenching, beautiful speech. And at the end, he opened it up for questions and someone stood up and said, you know, are there any questions you would not like for us to ask? And he just laughed and he goes, no, you can ask any question you like. He goes, but I'll just tell you, the answer is probably, I don't know. And I love that. I said, I need to take that and use that one at some point. Because I thought that was really interesting because the nature of the speech, and it was very much about going, experiencing a trauma and what he had been through. And so a lot of the questions would have been centered around your feelings and, you know, things like that. So he was just like, yeah, you can ask me any question you want. No questions off the table, but I, you know, the answer might be, I don't know.
Right. Absolutely. Isn't that interesting? It reminds me also of that. What's the movie, The Holiday, where they meet and they're talking about some of those older tricks of people beyond, and to, you know, to ask them the questions about their life and their moments and their times. And so a lot of these emotions, this concept around, what is it? The places we go when things aren't what they seem, mm-hmm. You know, it's all kind of relative to that space as to saying, you know, who were we then, who are we now? And it brings up the concept of nostalgia, which is also something she talks about, where, you know, sometimes we forget some of the gunk that's happened in the past. And we might look back on an experience that we had in our life that said, that was really a joyful time. And that really, you know, that's a place where I yearn for. I long for what it used to be like. Yeah. I feel that way when I think about some neighborhoods that I used to live in. Mm-hmm. I lived in the sweet little town of Round Hill, Virginia. And, you know, we literally would close down the streets on Memorial Day and have a parade and a pie eating contest. And we would have a soapbox derby and we did all the things. And it was such a sweet thing. Those moments make me feel very nostalgic for what was. Mm-hmm. My kids were little. I was growing them in this small, cute little community. You know, I wasn't thinking about all the other things that might have been going around when I look back on that. I just know that that's a moment in time. So if, you know, if somebody were to ask me about it, I would share this amazing experience where I felt relaxed and it was pleasurable and it was all interesting. interesting. But nostalgia sometimes, you know, it will show up when you're feeling a yearning for something now in your life. You're feeling a little lonely, you're feeling purposeless, you're feeling, you know, boy, things were a lot easier then. So it's a longing for what used to be, even if what used to be maybe wasn't even all that. But there's some kind of misconstrued space where you can create that because of a need you have now. I thought that was fascinating to learn about.
Absolutely. And I kind of related that a little bit to, you know, when we were on lockdown and we're, you know, during the pandemic and you really truly couldn't go anywhere. Funerals weren't happening. Weddings weren't happening. Big events where you'd have large gatherings weren't happening at all. And I remember the first time I went to a wedding after, you know, like once things started to open up again, and I was like, wow, I didn't realize how much I was missing. I just remember having this moment of like, wow, this feels so normal. I forgot how much I've missed this. Like just being able to sit down and have a coffee with someone at a coffee shop and things like that. Like I was really missing that. And I don't think I realized how much I was missing that in my life until I had a moment where I actually was like, oh, wait, look at me. I'm in this place. And oh, wait, we can do this again. Wow. You know, but yeah. it was something that I realized I was missing. But interestingly enough, I didn't necessarily act on it and start scheduling myself, you know, social outings, because there was still a little bit of that fear of, is it okay to do this? Is it not okay to do this? Right. And I still struggle with that sometimes.
Right. I think people are trying, you know, there's so many ups and downs about it that people are really going back and forth and, you know, they want to be with people, they want to, you know, expand, but then, you know, how much do you listen to certain things? And so I do feel like it's been this give and take for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. And I think we're finally getting to a better space, but definitely nostalgia has come up in those spaces because we really, you know, we want to know and we want to understand. So absolutely. Okay. So what else from this chapter, from chapter 5, are, you know, it hit you? Anything that came forward? I know we have a big chunk of chapter 6 that's really, you know,
there's like a lot going on in chapter 6. Yes.
So thinking of anything else.
You know, I think the one thing that when I read the title of chapter 5, places we go and things aren't what they seem, and the first word she used was amusement, I was like, oh. Well, I guess that's true in some ways. And I was like, you know, it's kind of like when we say, well, you know, you can either laugh or you cry. I mean, you know, that kind of statement. And I think that is true. And I really started to like ask myself, like, have I been in that situation? And yeah, I don't know that I can think of anything real specific, but, you know, I mean, just as things happen and you're like, oh, usually it's some meeting that I'm having, right? Where you go and you think you're having a meeting about one thing, and then it turns out it's really something different. And you just have to laugh about it, right? You're in that moment. You're like, oh, you just have to laugh about it. I actually recently had one of those where I was sitting down with several people and meeting some people for the first time, and my impression of what we were going to talk about was one thing. And they sat down and said, well, I'm not even sure what this meeting's all about. And I kind of chuckled because I was like, well, why would you accept a meeting that you didn't know? Why would you say yes to a meeting that you didn't know what it was about? It ended up being great, ended up being a really good meeting and something that everyone felt was time well spent. But it took us a while to kind of get on track of why are we all here? You know, and it was just funny in that moment that we're all sitting here going, oh, well, everyone's like, well, who scheduled this meeting and why are we all here? Cause I thought it was this. And it's clear we all had a different sense of why we were there, but it was one of those things that we all just kind of laughed about it. So.
Yeah. And the word amusement is you know, it didn't surprise me as what it looked like, but I thought it was interesting just to pause and think about it for a minute. And it reminds me of something that one of my loves in life is improv. And I took several courses of improv. And one of the most beautiful things about it is that I'm a pretty planned individual and I have a lot of things that happen right after the other, because that's how I create my life. And I, you know, have it, my ducks in a row. I took improv because I wanted to be creative and I wanted to do something cool. I was not even sure that the gift I was going to be given was this this concept of presence. This yes, and yes, this is here. And you have to be so present with a partner that's on stage, that's creating something, that I was amused nonstop the entire time in a performance space, because I thought to myself, not only when I was watching others on stage, because I was amused at how quickly they could come up with something. And it was not at all what I expected. It's not what it seemed. But also when I was in it myself, it was almost as if these little bursts of energy would happen every moment that the scene changed, the sentence changed, the, you know, what we were doing together changed. And we just had to be completely open and ready at all times. So when I think about, you know, this amusement of it's unexpected and we feel playful with those around us, it's kind of fun. And I, you know, that's one arena that I look for that, you know, where I get that unexpected nature, but I don't get it all the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whether we're amused by the way a meeting's running, or, you know, you've all had that side conversation, or you maybe been texting on the side, oh my gosh, did you see this or that, or, you know, that, but to look for those little moments of amusement, I think are actually a really cool gift of this energetic boost that, yeah, that's unexpected. And that's fun. It's awesome. It's neat to see it. You're amused by it. That's what people try to sell, right? They give people buy tickets to go get amused.
Right.
And so, you know, how can we find that more in our everyday life? That concept, what improv does, you know?
Yeah, it's so funny though, the words that resonated with me that you talked about is being open and ready.
Yeah.
And they're two very different things, right? I mean, being open requires a bit of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Being ready would almost indicate like you've got to prepare. But that's, yeah, I don't think that's what you're saying though.
No.
You're just saying that be open, listening, right? And really, because you're in that improv moment, you're having to truly like play off of someone else,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So it's being really listening and then like, how would you describe ready in that moment?
Well, I think it's no agenda.
Ah, okay.
It's actually the opposite. It's not prepared. It's having no agenda. So you're simply saying, I'm accepting the fact that I'm about to join stage, and whatever happens, I'm going to accept it, be open to it, and have no agenda. So if you go out and literally act like you're chopping down a tree, I'm supporting that. One of the rules in improv is that we're chopping a tree.
Right, right.
It's not that I start swimming and have a swimming scene, unless the swimming is next to the orchard, we're chopping down the tree and we create a story around that. But we're yes anding. So if somebody's chopping a tree, I'm in there saying, I remember when we planted that 20 years ago, he meant a lot to us, didn't he? And then all of a sudden my partner has to say, yeah, he doesn't mean so much to us now anymore, does he? And I say, chop that down. And we have this whole story going, right?
Right.
And people want to know, who's him? Why are we chopping it down? What happened? Like, we create the scene together, but but we're amused. We're amused as the actors and they're amused as the audience, because it's what's coming. I have no idea what's to come. Nothing is as it seems, you know?
So I'm going to throw this out there, because as I hear you say this, I think, wow, what if we took that approach to a difficult conversation?
Yes.
Right. Because for me personally, too often I go into if I know it's going to be a difficult conversation, I start prepping myself. Well, I want to make sure I say this. You start thinking of what you're going to say and do.
Right.
But that's going in with an agenda, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're, like you said, if you're being vulnerable, being open, you're listening, and you don't have an agenda, I personally think you're probably going, and if both of you approach that conversation in the same way, you're going to have a very effective conversation.
Yes.
And I don't think it's going to be nearly as difficult as you anticipate.
Yeah.
But I love that. That's really interesting to me.
And the energy when you're in that situation builds up. There's no downward motion.
Right, right.
So I often will do this with clients, is when they're dreaming and scheming, they'll come up with a concept and I'll say, they'll say something like, you know, maybe I could open my business. And I'll say, yes, and have the flexibility you want. And then they'll say, yes, and be able to attend to, you know, other things that I want to do. Yes, and have some time for your hobby. Yes, and I can have a little more autonomy, which is one of my values. Yes, and you just grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. Mm-hmm. And that's the same when you enter into a difficult conversation. You know, I have a need for connection. Yes, and I'd like to give that to you. Yes, and I also understand you have a need for autonomy. Yes, and I understand we could compromise. It's affirming what the person's bringing. It's putting you on the same team. So when a difficult conversation happens, often we put ourselves on the opposite sides of it rather than coming together. My husband always says this, come together on my side. Let's look at the interesting issue over here and put us together, right? But when we yes and, we're on the same page.
Right.
And that absolutely feeds, because that energy is just going upwards and it's positive and it feeds together towards that issue. So I think we can use that more and more often. It's a beautiful tool.
It really, really is. And like you said, it puts you both on the same side in a sense.
Yeah.
You're, right. Now you're together in this, as opposed to, I love you, but, you know,
right. Yeah.
Which because I've been guilty of saying.
Yeah. But does exactly what, you know, it's kind of like if I'm chopping a tree and you come and create a totally different scene, it immediately takes the, amusement out, because now all of a sudden people are like, wait a second, that killed the scene. It kills the scene. When you use the word, but it's just like saying, I'm taking this a different direction. And when it doesn't make sense in people's mind, whether it's a scene or really important conversation, mm-hmm. the amusement's gone and the confusion shows up and it totally takes out, it cancels itself. You know, yes, but yeah. Cancels.
That is so true and super insightful. So I think we're going to stop on that note for that chapter, because that's a great, great insight coming from that. But chapter 6 digs into, and we both have said, this is a real meaty chapter. There's a lot that's going on here, but this really focuses on places you go when you're hurting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is the tougher stuff, right? This is the words that some of the emotions, words that she used were anguish, hopelessness, despair, sadness, grief. And, you know, it's interesting. One of the questions as I'm writing my notes, right? Mm-hmm. Everything, and they talk a lot about hope. And when you're hurting, you want hope and you need hope. So I wrote down this question and I don't have the answer to it, but I would love for us to kind of discuss it. Is how do you cultivate hope? Like, so if I know someone's hurting, or let's start with ourselves, right? If we're hurting, because you got to start here first, you got to understand your own feelings before you really connect with someone else. Like if I'm really hurting, and I bring this up to you because you shared something with me one time that was a big eye opener for me. And it was the clean pain versus the dirty pain. Mm-hmm. Can you share a little bit of that concept? Because I think that is really applicable when you start to talk about this chapter.
Yeah. You know, oftentimes we can have something going on in our life and it may be really painful and it may be hard. It may be difficult. It could be anything. You know, my dog got hit by a car. That is a painful thing. We don't, you know, it really is clean pain. We are feeling really sad about that because mm-hmm. it's true. The dirty pain comes when we wrap that clean pain with painful thoughts that make it more personal against us. So my dog got hit by a car. I'm such a terrible dog owner. I should have never been able to adopt the dog. I'm so irresponsible. People are going to think that, you know, I don't care about animals or their safety. You know, it's that concept that the things that we wrap that pain in. So when we can differentiate between what's clean pain and what's dirty pain, clean pain, we recognize it and we say, I see you, I feel it, and I understand it. With dirty pain, we say, is this true? We can question dirty pain. We can take it to a place where we say, you know what? I'm not so sure that's true. And I need to investigate this more, because the story I'm telling myself is that it is, and it's making this clean pain not only more unbearable, but it's also convoluting the entire experience. So clean and dirty pain can be applied in a lot of situations. So I'm constantly encouraging people to say, is that clean or dirty?
Mm-hmm.
And I ask myself a lot, oh, that's dirty pain, Beth. Why are you thinking like that? Why are you associating that? And it's a really good thing to be able to differentiate the difference, because then when we can, when we're not so baffled and confused and constricted by this dirty pain, we're just looking at the clean pain. We can see it for what it is. And when we're ready, we can look for hope. And we can say, you know what, there is hope here. I will be okay. This will work out. I am not all these things. I am simply a person that just was hurt, and I will move on from this. And that's where hope starts to germinate, and it starts to grow and carry us out of that space.
Yes. And I think that's something that, like I said, was such an eye opener for me, because I've never thought of them as different. I never thought about that and that narrative in my head that's saying, I'm such a bad mom. I should be a better mom. I should be more attentive to my kids, or I shouldn't let my kids be on screen so much, you know, that type of thing. Like, I never thought about the fact that, oh, I'm like, actually I'm traveling for work and I'm gone a lot and I'm missing my kids. That's real. Right. Yeah. But then you can tend to go to, if I were a better mom, I'd be home more and I wouldn't be traveling. I'd be with my kids. That's something you're saying, don't give time to that. Don't give time and attention to that. Stay over here. Yes, it's real. I miss my family. I have to travel a lot for work. It's a sacrifice, but wow, I could really maximize the time when I am with them and can be with them, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And this shows up all the time. I mean, clean pain, you know, we have things that come up that bother us, and they can be little and they can be big, but we have the choice as to, you know, how much more we add on to that. And so if we can keep our side of the street clean, then we're able to, you know, to look elsewhere. And so when we're looking for hope in those moments, when it's, you know, we're feeling clean, we can think, where do I want to go from here? Like, this is hard, but I want to go somewhere else. And then Brené talks about your ability to stay flexible and be creative, mm-hmm. in finding ways to find that hope. And I think that's another way we can generate it, is that creativity. And then the third thing she talks about is that we believe in ourselves. When things are rough, or when things are feeling, you know, we're feeling anguish or despair, you know, when we believe, you know what, but I know I can pull my bootstraps up. I believe in myself. Mm-hmm. That you can't have that kind of belief in yourself and this agency around yourself when you're ruminating in dirty pain.
Right.
If you're clean, you can say, yes, and just like we talked about earlier, yes, it hurts, and I'm going to be okay. And I'm hopeful about that. And I believe that I can do this.
Right. And one thing that she talks about when, especially around anguish, is that just, you have to face it and accept it, create that awareness. Yeah. Just like you said, yes, I am here. I am feeling this. And reach out for help, because that's another way, in my mind, that's another way to cultivate hope, because oftentimes it's just having that person, or having your community of people, that your people, I always talk about that. Are these your people or not your people? Like, having your people to talk to and share with, right? Then you start to, it actually starts to make you feel better. And I know I've gone through hurt and pain and situations where I'd kind of just hide in my own, because I'm like, no one wants to hear my problems. No one wants to do this. But the moment I do reach out, excuse me, and, you know, someone says, how are you doing? And I'm actually honest about it and say, not so great. This is what I'm experiencing. I automatically start to feel it lift, mm-hmm. and I don't feel so weighted down by it anymore. It doesn't mean I'm going to rush out and go tell everyone how I'm feeling, because it's just something I think that, you know, depending on the environment in which you're, you know, grow up in, sometimes you're told to kind of squash these things and, mm-hmm. oh, don't invest too much time feeling that. Stay over here, stay positive, stay focused, you know. But I think it is important to be able to recognize what it is you're going through, be aware of it, and talk about it, feel it, go through it. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, it all depends on the environment in which you were brought up in, like how you handle those things. But I do think it's difficult for people sometimes to reach out to that community, their people, and say, wow, I just need somebody. I just want to talk to one. I don't need you to fix it. I just want to talk to you about it. Mm-hmm. And it really does make you feel so much better. And again, it requires you to be vulnerable. So going back through, that's where you really find strength and vulnerability, right? In that you just got to be vulnerable. You got to be honest and really talk about that.
Yeah. And finding that community of people. We talked about this, I think, the last time, but then every time I say it, I feel like I'm a German woman, Schadenfreude. I love that. And it's literally, you know, people that want your light to shine. Mm-hmm. It is such a, I love that. I love that concept of, you know, people that are coming around you so that when you share your grief or your loss or your, you know, your sadness around something, they're people that are there to kind of hear it, be present with you, but to help, you know, lift you up out of that space. And so when you say finding my people, these aren't people that are just like-minded, that are exactly like you, that are, you know, but they're people that see you and your uniqueness and want that for the world. And they want you to, you know, to bring that out, and they're going to protect you in that way. And I love that concept. You know, I think it's so important. And when you were talking about, you know, the importance of knowing, you know, your emotions and the power that they, you know, that you're able to feel inside when you name them, I think that when we don't name them, we're almost setting ourselves up for failure, because we're not giving it a name and we're not classifying what it looks like. And it reminds me of the movie Inside Out. Have you seen that?
I have. Yes. Right?
Yeah. So, you know, Brené talks about sadness, and she talks about, you know, there are positive aspects to sadness. There are positive aspects to several of these feelings that often feel negative. And the positive aspects is they help us to feel the other things as not sad or not, you know, difficulty. And when you watch that movie without this, you know, without this sweet little blue figure that was sad, they kept trying to push her aside, saying, no, she wasn't blue. She was green, wasn't she? They kept trying to put her in the corner. You go sit in the corner and stay put. You know, we've got things to do. We need to make her happy. We need to make her, you know, and then all of a sudden anger would come because she couldn't express herself. So anger would come out, or, you know, this, like she would have a complete meltdown. And it was not until Joy saw sadness as the way out.
Yes.
And she held her hand and she had to go rescue her from somewhere depths in the depths of this random computerized DNA structure. I don't even understand. But they bring her, and she wants to bring sadness along because she realizes that's exactly what this little girl needed to experience, was the clean pain of her childhood being changed because of a move and what it was looking like. Her family was different and she'd never hockey team, and that was clean pain. But right. If we don't allow ourselves to sink in and feel that, and we just try to wrap it up with happiness and joy and moving on, and, you know, we're feeling faster than we, where we really are. We are moving, we're going faster than we really are. And so by bringing that sadness in, all of a sudden life started to balance back out. And that was when all the parts were saying, wow, we need to pay attention to things like this.
Right.
So our emotions are indicators of things that we might need to pay attention to. And as we're learning about all of these, I feel like millions of emotions, even though I think there's 87, the more that we know about them, we can identify them and show gratitude when they show up, because they're there to teach us something.
Absolutely. And you're so right. I think, you know, when you are in a space of, let's say, sadness, right? And then you can reflect on those times where you weren't in a space of sadness and you were in a better space. Mm-hmm. And for me, that also gives me hope, right? Like that helps me to find hope, because I've been there before. I know I'll get back there again.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I mean, life is just one, you know, a cycle of waves. You're up and down and all over the place, you know? And I think it is important to be able to just look at that it, not to say you shouldn't be present in that moment and feel and understand where you are, but when you do, then I think it's time at that point to say, you know what? I've been here before. I will get back to where I want to be at. I won't stay here, you know? And I think that that is one way to drive hope too, is just remembering that, you know, there is a blessing in those moments. And we've talked about this before, but those are the moments of growth too. Mm-hmm. Like really allowing yourself to feel that hurt, I think are also those moments of growth, because once you've overcome that, you can look back and go, wow, look where I've come from. Right. Mm-hmm. And kind of pat yourself on the back. You did the work, you yeah. felt it, but you don't appreciate it, like you said, unless you really feel it and yeah. give it the attention it needs.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, having said all of this, I do feel like we need to take a pause, because we're talking about a level of an emotion that is manageable sometimes by yourself or by talking to a friend, right?
Right.
But when we're talking about severe grief or anguish, loss of a child, you know, anguish that literally, I mean, she says it comes from our bones. It often causes us to physically crumple in on ourselves, literally bringing us to our knees or forcing us all the way to the ground. That is not something we say, oh, I'm so grateful for. Yay, we move
right,
on.
Right. Right.
So what we're not saying is that is, but what that is, and oh my gosh, this chapter, literally, I felt my bones trembling when I was reading it. When I saw the picture of the sculpture of the dark elegy, I think, I don't even know how you say that, or the pained mother surrounded by the murder of crows. It was a sheep with her baby in front of her, and the crows were all ready to pounce. That's the kind of anguish that I couldn't even explain or understand, but I could feel it while I was reading this.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that requires time, energy, licensed help often.
Yes. Well, that's when she says you have to be able to seek help, reach out for help. That is, when you're in that moment, reach out. Don't keep it there with you. Don't hold it in. Reach out, seek help at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because when she talks about grief, she says, sometimes we think we've dealt with it and it can surprise us over and over again. You know, when somebody loses someone, that they have 365 days to experience without that person. Every single day of that calendar year is a different day, and then years and years beyond that. And so it will surprise. And even if we think we've integrated into our lives, often we don't. And she says, it's about, oh, this is so fascinating to me, when she says it's about reclaiming your breath. Like when you experience something trauma or that's traumatic or a trauma, you reclaim your breath first, then you're starting to reclaim your feelings and your thinking. But then it's about getting your bones back and returning to your body. So we're not going to, you know, your bones will support you, but you're never going to be the same again. But it's about trying to reclaim everything and get it back into your body. And that was such a beautiful visual for me, mm-hmm. and understanding that, yes, it's about bringing it all, and it may never be the same again. And that's what severe trauma or grief or things like that can do. And there's hope in that. But it's not as easy as watching Inside Out and being grateful for that. It's more about processing that, asking for help, really giving it the time and energy and space that it needs to get that breath back.
Absolutely.
I thought that was just a beautiful analogy that she used in the book.
Yeah. This chapter, like we said, there's a lot here, and it's worth investing. And, you know, the anguish and despair, I think, especially, personally, I've had the loss of a child, and it was interesting. I think you and I've talked a little bit about this, and that is interesting for me because I have the tendency to look around me and go, who needs my help? Because I maybe don't want to deal with what I'm feeling in that moment. And I'm like, oh, it's my job and it's my responsibility to hold it together and be there for those people around me. But what I've learned is that there, and just like you indicated, there are those moments, and sometimes they're very unexpected when it surfaces mm-hmm. and you're like, whoa, where did that come from? And sometimes I don't even know what's driving it. And it takes me, you've taught me this. That's when you kind of have to stop and go, what's going on? Why am I feeling this way? How have I, why, you know, really asking yourself that question, like, why do I feel this way? And start to dig into it. And it's, for me, it's been very typical to just like be too busy. It's to, oh, I'm too busy to deal with this. I'm too busy to feel this right now. So let me move on. But I think the downside to that is it can, and I know Brené's talked a little bit about this in the book as well, but I mean, it can have that physical aspect, right? That mm-hmm. affect you physically as well. So mm-hmm. again, the importance of understanding these things, the importance of giving them the attention that they need mm-hmm. and then working through it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right? And when we do that, not only does it help with our own grief or our own anguish or what we're experiencing, but it allows others to do the same.
Yes.
And I love that the impact we can have on our community when we create an openness and there's no fear, there's no shame. It just simply says, come and be. And, you know, Brené says people want or need their grief to be witnessed. And that's what it's about. We need to not only witness it for ourselves, witness it for other people. Allow yeah. this yes and open and ready. It's just like improv that we talked about in the very beginning. I'm going to step on stage with you, Sandy, and I'm going to hear it, and I'm going to be with you, and I'm going to be open and ready for what you've got. My hands are open. I'm with you because either I've experienced it or I'm willing to at least schadenfreude, help your light shine. And I want to do anything that will help it to shine brighter and brighter and brighter because the world needs more of that.
So I'm going to give you an example of something I've witnessed in my own family. My sister had a real traumatic sudden loss, and it was a very difficult thing for her to go through. She still, you know, is going through it. And another family member, I'm trying not to be too exposing, but another family member is always very concerned, but always like, it's okay. You'll be okay. You'll be okay. And she kind of gets the feeling like they don't really understand. They don't really care. And in reading this chapter, it hit me. There isn't that this person doesn't care or doesn't understand. This person is struggling to see her hurting, but doesn't know how to deal with it. And I kind of got the impression it's almost as it's too painful for this person to see her in that way. So I feel like I'm being too vague, but
I get it.
Protect the others involved. They misunderstand each other because this person, I think, has never let themselves go there or either is so uncomfortable when they see others there that they just want to like pull them out. I just want you to be happy. I want you to be happy. It'll be okay. It'll be okay. It'll be okay. When on from her perspective, it becomes very dismissive. Mm-hmm. You don't understand. You don't care. You just want me to be happy and cheery, you know? Yeah. And yes, we want everyone to be happy and cheery. But it's not that this person doesn't care and doesn't understand,
yeah.
but because they haven't been able to deal with their own, like connect with their own emotions and what they're feeling, it makes it almost impossible to see her and connect with her and her own feelings. And it's the, let me wrap it up in a pretty bow and everybody just smile and it'll all be okay. But that's not what she needs. Right. And so I've watched this dynamic over the years. And I always say to her, I said, I think this person is coming from a really good place, but this person is struggling with seeing you this way. And they want to fix it because it's so hurtful for them to see you hurting mm-hmm. that they just want to fix it. And that's the only way they know how to deal with it. And right. I think And I think she has, it's helped her to like try to look at it in that way. But it is, again, it goes back to the importance of in our own lives being to fully understand what we're going through and giving ourselves the space to feel it and give it the attention, as you said earlier. Otherwise, we really will struggle to connect with other people. And then they're going to completely misunderstand where you're coming from, even mm-hmm. though you're coming from a good place. Mm-hmm. So I really, as I went through this chapter, that one example definitely stood out to me. And it made me kind of recognize the importance of really continuing to do my own self-development work.
Right.
Because I never would want someone in that situation to feel like I was being dismissive or I didn't care, mm-hmm. you know, but it can come across that way if you're not giving them, if you're not really understanding what it is they need from you.
Right. Absolutely. And I think you're right. It sounds to me as if it's a general misunderstanding of two well-intended people. Mm-hmm. And I think I learned this a while ago when feeling like you're thinking about a topic or a person and it happens to be maybe a conflict in your mind where you're in their business and you're thinking a lot about it, just to call it what it is and simply say, you know, the story I'm telling myself is that you're very dismissive of the grief that I've experienced. So tell me where I'm wrong. Or the story, because it puts it on you. The story I'm telling myself is that you're not dealing with your grief and I love you so much and I really want to fix it. And I'm not sure how to enter into that. Tell me where I'm wrong.
Right.
I love that concept because when you talked about that, I thought about a friend that I have that has been grieving something pretty deeply for a few years. And the story I'm telling myself is I don't know how to enter into that because I don't understand her grief and I'm not going to try and push her along. So wouldn't it be great if I just said the story I'm telling myself is I should give you space, but I'm wondering if the space is making you feel like I don't care.
Right.
Tell me more. You know, it's that conversation of two individuals just simply trying to get on the same page with love. Because if we think about what we think about from a distance and we never engage, so much can be assumed and so much can happen there that's not even happening. So how do we take that entire story and present it and say, please mark this with red ink.
Yes.
tell me where I'm missing it. And then the two people can help each other get to a space. You know what? You're right. I do feel like you've dismissed me. However, I can also see that you care about me and maybe I need to let you in a little bit more, right? Whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But it really does help in that kind of a conflictual conversation.
Yeah. I've also noticed that in the workplace as well. Because in the workplace, we tend to bring less feelings and emotion to the table into a conversation like that. And I think it's important for us to be able to just know our intent going into a conversation like that and really making sure that we are clear on what our intention is. Because I think most of the times, if you really think about what your intention is, then you're going to convey it better. But if you go in and you're like, you did this wrong and I feel like you set me up for failure, you know? And the person's like, what? I didn't set you up for failure. You can create this defensive mode. Mm. And it really is just understand your intention. I say that because in the workplace, we do tend to try to remove all emotions, which mm-hmm. is impossible to do, but that's what we tell ourselves, right? Can't bring emotions and feelings to the workplace. But I think it's in a situation like that, you will, and you do. And it's really about knowing what your intentions are before you engage in a conversation like that.
Yeah. And setting it up in a healthy way. What yes. I heard you just saying was you did all these things wrong and you set me up for failure. You, mm-hmm.
The accusing, right?
Right. Other than the basic I statements or the other thing I was sharing, the story I'm telling myself is that these things didn't go right. And I feel like I didn't really have a lot of choice in this space. And I'm trying to better understand how I could have been more successful. It's I feel X when this happens, right? You know, it's putting it back on yourself because you're really taking the ownership of this conversation rather than the blame. There's two totally different energies that you bring mm-hmm. when you're presenting it as this is how I feel, or this is a story that I have in my head. Because we can all create a lot of things going on. And unless we get clarity on it, we're just going to keep living in that story.
Right.
You know?
Right. So true.
And going at someone with that accusatory, you is not, it doesn't set you up for a good, healthy conversation. It does put people on the defense right away. And it pretty much says you're over there and I'm over here. And now we've got to go at each other.
Right.
Versus, come here, let's talk about this.
Right. No, it's so true. And again, here we are like almost an hour in and there's just so much to cover in this book. I think we're finally halfway through the book now, but there's just so much here to unpack, but it's again, I think another super insightful conversation we've had today. So thank you for again, bringing your brilliance and your insights.
Thank you. This is a fun conversation. Oops, my dogs are telling us it's time. Alarm clock is going off.
I love it. I love it. Well, Beth, just tell us give us your website. Tell us how people can find you.
Thanks for asking, Sandy. If people want to be in touch, they can get in touch with me via my website, which is thegroundandcanary.com. They can email me there or even just set up a free 30-minute session if something triggered or something, you know, you really want to get further in depth about and just, you know, let's talk about it. I'd be happy to. It'd be a lot of fun.
Again, Beth, thank you for joining us. This has been a pleasure having you. I can't wait. We're going to continue this conversation and continue to dig into this book. So I hope you all will join us. You've been listening to the Her Journey Told podcast, powered by Pivotal Moments Media. Thanks and have a great day. You've been listening to the Her Journey Told podcast, powered by Pivotal Moments. For more inspirational content, go to pivotalmoments.org. I'm Sandy Lutton. Thanks so much for joining us. Make sure to keep an eye out for more episodes where podcasts can be heard. See you next time.